Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 715. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about food and temples and markets, hikes and beaches, and more food as we go to Penang, Malaysia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Penang. I'd like to welcome to the show Ruth from Vancouver, and that's not the one in Canada, but the one in Washington, and that's the state of Washington, not D.C., who's come to talk to us about Penang, Malaysia. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And some of you met Ruth if you traveled with me to Morocco. Ruth was one of the people on that trip, and we're friends from long before that. And you have spent the last 3 years up until the coronavirus down in Southeast Asia. Is that, have I got the timing right, or was it longer than that?
We had 3 years in Singapore, and then we were into our just past our first year in Penang when the COVID virus came out. And I actually was here in the States and got stranded here as the movement control order went into effect in Penang, and I wasn't able to get back into the country. So we are now home back in the state of Washington. And but Penang was our home for about a year.
Well, and when we get to the point where we can, why should someone go to Penang?
Penang is just a very interesting piece of Asia. You have three distinct people, ethnicities, who make up Penang. Penang is one of the 13 states of Malaysia. It's the second smallest. It's the only one that has an island plus mainland components. Okay. And the island is the part that we are familiar with. That's where we lived. We lived on Penang Island. Penang Island has, like I say, three different distinct groups. There's the Chinese, which are about 50%, which is more than the most of Malaysia, your Chinese percentage. And then you have 40% Malay and about 9% of the Indians, who are mostly Tamil speakers. So they're from Southern India. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we have the expat groups. And in particular, there's one large group of expats that now reside in Penang as a result of Malaysia's MM2H program, which is Malaysia, My Second Home. So quite a few people have actually retired. They've made it their permanent home. So it's a very eclectic group of different ethnicities and different cultures, and they do not intermix very much. So you really do have these distinct areas and distinct foods and distinct ways of living and languages. And you can do it all in a very small space. If people have been to Singapore, Penang is about the third of the size of Singapore and only has about 15% of the population of Singapore. There's about, on the island, about 700,000 people. That makes it much more spread out. You're not just in these big crowds of people, and yet you're experiencing the same kind of cultural mixing and interaction that you might get in Singapore.
Excellent.
I like to think of Penang sort of like Singapore before Lee Kuan Yew came in and modernized and sanitized everything. So Penang gives you that old feel, I think, of what Singapore would have been like before everything was cleaned up.
Interesting. So,
and not to say that it's dangerous or unhealthy to be there, but you just get that kind of older feel. You still have people cooking on the streets for food and things like that. So I highly recommend going just because it's different than a lot of other places you might go in Asia.
Well, and in terms of Malaysia, we're on or just off of the mainland portion of Malaysia in the west coast in the north. So we did a show on Langkawi before. We're south of that, which is way up by the border with Thailand. And then we're two-thirds the distance from Kuala Lumpur up to the Thai border.
Yes, yes. Like you say, we're to the west of the mainland and very close, actually, up. I think there's only one state, maybe two, that are above Penang on the mainland before you get to Thailand.
Okay.
So it is still pretty close to Thailand. And there is some influence of Thai culture and Thai food in what is in Penang.
Yeah, I think you're only 40 miles from Thailand.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And what's interesting about Penang, too, is, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but you came and visited us when we were in Singapore, and we went to the Peranakan Museum. Do you remember that in Singapore?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
So Penang is one of three places in that Malaysian sort of Singaporean area that has the Peranakan Chinese, or also called the Straits Chinese, also called the Babanonyas. So they are located in Penang, in Malacca, and in Singapore. So I've actually been to all three places. I've been to the museums in each of those places, and it's a fascinating culture. Mm-hmm. The people from that culture came from China, from mainland China, many years ago, several hundred years ago.
Merchants and traders, if I remember correctly.
Yep. And they came in and adopted many of the Malay practices and cultures and some of the foods and sort of turned them into their own. They were usually very, very wealthy. And their homes were extravagant, and their furniture was lavish and carved, and they also incorporated some of the colonialism of the British. So they had fancy dinnerware and fancy glasses and mirrors, and their homes were just beautiful. And in Penang, you can go onto Church Street, which is down in Georgetown, and there is a Peranakan Museum there, and for 20 ringgit, which is almost nothing. That's 4 ringgit to a dollar, so it's $5. You can go in and get a tour of the Peranakan Museum there, and it's fascinating. It was owned actually by a gangster, a Chinese gangster, and his family, and it's now part of the state, I believe, as a museum. And they do try to preserve this Peranakan culture because it is only really in these three distinct places. So that's just kind of a fun little side piece if you want to go explore more about the Peranakans and the people that were called the Babas were the men and the Nonyas were the women. So, and they had distinct dress, and you can see some of that in this museum, as well as their furniture and the highly beaded shoes that the women wore. And it's very interesting culture.
Well, and I think we've already jumped into my next question is what should we do when we're in Penang? So we've started on Church Street.
Yes. So there's several different areas on Penang Island. Like I say, it's not really that big. It's only about a third of the size of Singapore. You can cover it in about a week. I think you would be able to see most of what's there, at least what would be for most people interesting to see. Like I say, the British were there. I mentioned that just a little bit there in regard to the Peranakan culture. Mm-hmm. They came in the late 1700s. And built a fort. There's actually a fort called Fort Cornwallis. It's on the east. I always have to get my east and west right.
Yeah,
east side of the island.
Same problem.
East side of the island, about right about Georgetown. If you just go east to the water, it sits on an area called the Esplanade. And that's an interesting, just old piece of history there. It's apparently the oldest fort that is in existence in Malaysia right now. And it was never really used for kind of protection. It was more part of the British East India Company and just a place where they kind of monitored trade that came in and out. And you can go visit that. Nearby that, which is another little piece you can take in, there is the Jubilee Clock Tower, which was built to commemorate Queen Victoria's Jubilee year. And if I remember correctly, it's 60 feet tall, 1 foot for each of her Jubilee year. And so that's something to kind of just walk past. Probably we should go back just maybe one step and talk about how to get around on Penang Island, because that will be important when we talk about things to go see. When you arrive in Penang, you'll fly into the airport, which is in the southern half of the island. It's out kind of in the industrial area. And there are some old kampongs or farming areas out in that area as well. But you'll fly into the airport once it gets open and allows people to come in for international travel. And the best thing to do is to just go to the taxi counter and get a taxi. And that will take you to wherever your hotel will be at the time. Generally speaking, I would not recommend taking taxis on the island because they're very expensive. But from the airport, that's probably your best bet. It's about 44 ringgit, I believe, to go to most places, and that would be about $11 US. So then you can get to your place. But then outside of that, there's a great app you can download on your phone that's called Grab Taxi, G-R-A-B. And you just put Grab on your phone and you can get a Grab taxi from most places. If you're kind of remote, it would be a little harder. But if you're in anywhere in the area of Georgetown or Gurney Drive, which is another big area we'll talk about, you'll be able to definitely get a Grab taxi to just about anywhere. And it'll cost you about 5 to 10 ringgit. So it's going to be very inexpensive. And that's one way to get around. Another way is if you're in Georgetown proper, you can walk just about anywhere pretty easily. I would recommend a very good pair of walking shoes before you head to Penang. It's always hot. It's always humid. Those sandals that work great in the United States to go to the beach and take your hike along the beach are not going to work in Penang. You will get blisters. You definitely will get blisters. So just the humidity is very high.
And that's from somebody who lived in Singapore for 3 years.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So I had very few shoes that I brought from the U.S. that did not cause problems. Hmm. I had one really nice pair of sandals that I never got a blister in, and then the rest of the time I wore just like a really good pair of, you know, Nike tennis shoes and socks.
Well, and that begs the question of the best time of year to go to Penang. It's always going to be warm. I assume it's going to be wetter in some time periods than others.
Yes, yes. You will see more rain as you get into what we would consider the cooler months here in the U.S. So maybe November, December, January, you're going to get a bit more rain. But generally speaking, when it rains really hard and then it lets up. Okay. So you might have rain for about 15, 20, 30 minutes and then it'll let up.
Does that make it a better time of year to go when there's some relief from the heat or not?
Not necessarily. Okay. I think coming from a place where you don't have heat and humidity, it's always going to feel terrible when you get there. My parents had asked us the same thing when we lived there. They said, what's a better, cooler time to come? I said, there isn't one. There just isn't one. We got quite used to the heat and the humidity. To us, it didn't seem bad a lot of the times. But for most people who are just going to come and arrive there, it's going to be very hot and very humid at any time of the year. So again, really good pair of walking shoes that's going to serve you well to get around. And I always recommend that people wear, this is kind of a little side note, black shorts. Or dark colored, because you're going to be sweating.
Okay.
And if you sweat and you got a light colored pair of shorts on, people are going to notice that you're really sweating. In some places, you may not want them to see that you're sweating. So I always remind people, wear something like dark black or something that doesn't change color if it gets wet from sweat. So, and you'll just be a little more comfortable wandering around. Back to getting around to walking. And then there are some bicycle rental on the street type bike rental things that you can read about when you look at it. It tells you an app you can get on your phone and then you can check the bike in and out. Then there's one other way that we've used a couple times when we lived in Penang, and that was what they call SoCar, S-O and then C-A-R, SoCar. Again, it's an app you can get on your phone, and you can actually rent these cars that are placed around the island in different places. And it's kind of nice, especially if you want to try and go across the island to the west coast.
Okay.
That's a great way to do it. Or you can also hire a driver. Go online, look up people in Penang that would hire themselves out as drivers, and you can get somebody to drive you around that way too. And that's not very expensive as well.
And when you say across the island, I'm looking at the map and it's something like 15 miles tall and 10 miles across, somewhere in that range. So mm-hmm. not they're just, we're not just, talking about hours to get across.
No, it would take, you know, maybe half an hour depending mm-hmm. upon traffic. The problem is there isn't really a direct route from the across, west to the right. east. You have to go either down south and back up or up north and back down. Mm-hmm. So it does take maybe half an hour. These are small,
hilly,
often two-lane roads that are taking mm-hmm. you around. So you're not going to get there real quickly, but you can get a car, driver, whatever. And we'll talk about more why you might want to go to the west later. Okay. But we can get back to Georgetown a bit. So Georgetown was named a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2008. And so as far as things to see, we talked about Fort Cornwallis and then the clock tower. And then if you continue to head west.
And we should just say before we leave from mm-hmm. Cornwallis, yes, in answer to the question that some of the readers have, that is that Cornwallis, the Cornwallis who surrendered to George Washington at the end of the Revolutionary War. We're talking about the same period that this was built, and it was named after somebody who we don't name a lot of forts after, but the same guy.
Right. The British must have been proud of him for some reason. So we're going to head over into Georgetown, and it's a pretty simple walk and not very far. You'll get onto Beach Street right after you've been over in that area, mm-hmm. and Beach Street will take you into Georgetown. Now, wherever you decide to stay, you could stay in the heart of Georgetown if you want, or if you'd rather be a little less around people, you can stay up north in an area called Batu Ferengi, which is right on the beach. There are some nice resorts up there. That's very expat area of the island. But staying down in Georgetown is kind of nice because you can just leave from your hotel and go wander around Georgetown. On Beach Street, that's one of the main east to west streets through there. You'll come across different little museums. Some of them are very funky. There's one called the Wonder Food Museum. Food.
Like, I wonder if that's food or...
No. Penang and Singapore and areas in this area of the world are very much into food and their food culture.
Yes.
It's huge. Uh-huh. It's a giant piece of their lives. And this museum has giant sized examples of the different foods. So one of the foods you might come across later, we'll talk about food later, would be a giant bowl of Penang laksa. And so it's literally 5-6 feet across this bowl and about 3 or 4 feet high. And they've made these little replicas of it, of these foods up inside this museum. You can wander around and look at these things and take pictures with them and stuff like that.
That is so that's just hilarious. And
yeah.
And the answer to the question of who would want to do that, take pictures of themselves with giant food, is my wife and my daughter.
Yeah. And lots of people do. It's kind of fun.
Running thing on our trips and something we would have been able to do had we visited you in Penang had this not all happened, but
yeah. That's yeah, funny. And it's kind of a fun little thing. And then there's other ones. There's like the little backwards museum. There's a teddy bear museum.
Wait. The backwards museum.
I have not been into it. I've just seen signs for it. And then there's the ones, you know, where you can go in and you take the picture where it looks like you're like standing on the cloud or those type of museums sure. mm-hmm. as well that are sort of touristy kind of things. But I have
museums
not been
that
to
are aimed at the Instagram generation that are really popular.
Yes, exactly. So you can have your fill of those kind of things. The other thing that's very much a piece of Georgetown is the street art. And whatever hotel or that you would be staying in, or even maybe at the airport, you might find a little pamphlet. You can find these little maps that show you where all the street art is in Georgetown. And I think there's about 30 different places you can go see it, different street art. The one that's the most iconic and the most famous, and you see it on all kinds of t-shirts and bags, et cetera, in Penang, is two little kids that are on a bike. And the kids are painted on the wall of a building, and the bicycle is real and set in front of it and up against the wall. And that is one of the most iconic pieces of street art, like I say, that is in Penang. That's on Armenian Street.
Okay.
And again, you can get a map at any hotel that will have where all the street art is. And it was actually commissioned in, I think, 2010, after they got that 2008 UNESCO World Heritage rating or whatever you call it. They set out to kind of spruce up Penang a little bit and make it like more of a place people want to come. And one of them was going out and getting let's see, he was a Lithuanian graffiti artist named Ernest. I cannot pronounce his last name. It's like Zakarevic. And he came in and painted most of these. And it's very interesting and kind of fun to go around and see it. So I would highly recommend you do that.
Well, and I should say that I did get a chance to look up, you talked about the backwards museum. I think it's the one you're talking about is the Upside Down Museum.
Oh, the Upside Down Museum. Okay, and that's what it is.
Everything is, again, for people who like to take their pictures on Instagram, everything is on the ceiling. And so you get pictures of you standing on the ceiling, basically, because you put your camera upside down and everything else. It looks like you're standing on the ceiling in these rooms. And so it's...
Definitely for that crowd with the Instagram.
Exactly.
So, and there are a couple others like that there too, which, like I say, I have not actually gone to them myself, but you can go see quite a bit of that kind of stuff. So after you've kind of looked around Georgetown, you've poked your head in and out of some of the old Chinese shops, you've looked at all the street art, maybe picked yourself up something to eat along the way, it's kind of fun to go into Little India. And that's also a part of Georgetown. It's just sort of melded into that whole Georgetown type area on Penang Island. And Little India has got some very interesting spice shops you can go into. Like I said, the Indian population is about 9 or 10% of the island. They're the South Indians. They do not intermix really with the people. Keep their little group, their little ethnic groups. They don't intermingle. There's not much intermarriage. So these are pretty distinct still. So Little India, you will get a taste of kind of being in India. There's spice shops, there's sari shops, there's Indian temples, which are interesting to go poke around in. And there's lovely, lovely restaurants and street food of Indian, South Indian street food. There's one in particular called Sri Anda Bhawan. And S-A-B, people refer to it as. That is a great place to go get some good South Indian breakfast. They have idli and dosa and chutneys and just lovely food there. And they make it right out in front. You can watch them making your dosa, which is a very large kind of flat pancake. And then they roll it up and you eat that with various chutneys. And that's a great kind of breakfast to start your day if you want to go tromp around Little India a little bit and take in the sights and the smells and feel like you're in India for a morning. One of my more favorite things to do. Oh, I almost forgot. Hugh told me, my husband, Hugh, who you know as well, Chris, knew him before you knew me. There's a great place just, I'm trying to think of logistic-wise, it is to the south of Georgetown called the Clan Jetties, the Chinese Clan Jetties. And it's a bunch of jetties that stick out into the water. Penang, being an island, is surrounded obviously by water. And these jetties stick out and they used to be owned by different clans. You know, and you can wander out on some of them and there's little shops. And at the end, there's a little temple and you can just kind of look out at the water. It doesn't take a whole lot of time to go just wander through there, but it is something interesting to see.
Okay.
A little piece of the Chinese part of the island.
Well, it looks like now it's relatively tourist friendly or tourist facing. Would that be accurate? Okay.
Yes, yes. It's very much for tourists to go wander through there.
Okay.
Yeah, and across the street from that is a very nice food court to eat in. Food courts are all over the island of Penang. And like I say, we'll talk about food a little bit later because that's a big, big piece of their culture. But there is a nice food court straight across the street from Clan Jetties to eat at. But taking in more of the Chinese part of the culture of the island, there is a huge Chinese temple called Kek Lok Si. And that is kind of located, I would say, really close to the middle of the island. Very large Chinese Buddhist temple. Largest in all of Malaysia, apparently. They just keep building onto it. And it's located in an area of the island called Air Atam. Air means water in Malay. And I'm not sure what Atam means, but there's a big reservoir right near this temple as well. And that is worth a half a day just to go kind of wander through this temple and look at the different areas that are in it. There's a little pagoda you can climb up to the top of, and then you can take a very short little kind of tram ride up to where they've built this new piece of it, which has this giant goddess statue. You get a very nice view of Penang Island and the water, and looking across to the mainland from up at that temple as well.
And so that's, we say up in the temple, we move to the interior of the islands, we're up in the hills.
Yes, sorry, we have. We've moved to the middle of the island with the Ira Tom Dam and this Keklok Sea Temple.
And Ira Tom, by the way, means black water.
Oh, black water, okay. Oh, I should have known that. Itam is black, so I should have been able to figure that one out. So, but yes, Ira Tom is up there. That's, like I say, an interesting piece to go see.
Well, and also see the rest of the island, it seems like, from there, from the pictures I'm seeing.
Well, we'll talk about even more, an even better view of the island in just a minute here. But that is one place where you can see out across the island, and it's a lovely view. I should say, talk about the island and its connection to the mainland at this point, because when you're up there looking out across the island, you're going to look out toward the mainland, you're going to see two bridges. For a long time, there was only one bridge, and they call that bridge the first bridge. So when you refer to areas on Penang Island, you refer by bridges. The first bridge was there for many, many years. I don't know exactly when it was first built. I probably could have looked that up, but I didn't. And that has just always been known as the Penang Bridge, or the first bridge. The second bridge has a full name called the Sultan Abdul Halim Muadazam Shah Bridge. And that was built, I want to say, maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe longer ago than that. Maybe 15 years ago.
2008 was when they started, so I'm not sure when they finished.
Okay, yeah. So it's been a little while, but they did finally get that second one put in. Very, very long bridge. Hugh used to ride over that every day. It's 18 to 20 kilometers across. So, but you will see those when you're standing up high on Keklok Sea. When you're up at the very top of that temple, you can look out and you'll see those two bridges. And so when you hear people talking about the first bridge or the second bridge, you'll kind of have a better idea of what they're talking about then when you're standing up there. From Ira Tom and the Keklok Sea Temple, I would encourage people to next go take in, we'll kind of go back to Georgetown a little bit, but not completely. People on the island have these markets, wet markets, we call them. The reason they call them wet is because the floor is often wet when they clean up. And so, but it's places you can go and purchase meats or seafood or vegetables, and sometimes some cooked food is there as well, different little snacks and things like that. And you'll find these markets everywhere on the island. We lived at the Gurney Drive area of the island, which is north of Georgetown. It's about a 20-minute walk north out of Georgetown. And we had a very nice one there called the Pulau Tikus Market. Pulau is island, and I think Tikus was mouse. So I think it was a mouse island. And we had a really nice market that you can go wander around. I talk about this just because it gives you a way to go in and see the regular, just normal people doing their morning shopping or doing their morning breakfast, getting their kopi, which is their coffee, or getting a plate of noodles for breakfast, or getting some little Indian, you know, flatbreads or something like that. But just a great way to just go kind of see the regular population out doing their morning routine. And the food is great, and it will cost you less than $2 or $3 to get your whole breakfast. And it's really wonderful. And so I would highly recommend that. There's, like I say, the Pulau Tikus Market. If you head down into Georgetown, there's a market called the Chaurasta Market. And that is another really nice one in the Batu Ferengi area, which is north of on the island. I talked about you could stay up there if you wanted near the beaches. There's a huge night market up there. And there's several daytime markets in that area as well. And all of these things you can readily Google for.
But we'll have lists of them in the show notes as well.
Yeah, where, you know, you can head to some of these markets and try out some of the different local foods, or just kind of wander around and see what people are doing for their regular shopping. So I wanted to throw that in there before I forgot about it.
Well, and I see them called markets, and I sometimes also see them called hawker stalls or hawker centers, as they would be in Singapore.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a difference. A hawker center would be dedicated particularly to food.
Got it. Okay.
And you would go there to eat, whereas a wet market would be things to eat, yes, but more of you're going to buy your fresh chicken. I mean, they're literally butchering the chicken there that morning.
Got it.
Yeah, you kind of see the chickens over in their cages, and you're like, well, your day is not going to be a good one today. And they're squeezing coconut milk. You know, I mean, it's just interesting. But you can also buy food to eat. In the Pulau Tikus market, there's an Indian gentleman who sells roti mayam. Oh, I can't remember. I'm losing the name of what it was. But these little coconut, like pancake things, and they are so good. And he's always there in the Pulau Tikus market in the morning selling that. So, and then char kway kak, which is a stir-fried type rice cake thing. You can get that in these markets in the morning. And but there's just lots to see, more than just a hawker center. A hawker center will be more for just eating food.
Got it. Okay.
Then I think next, after you've seen Georgetown, you've seen some markets, you've gone to the Kekloksi Temple, I would recommend taking a day. Because of the heat and the humidity, you're going to be tired. Mm-hmm. More so than you would be at home. And you're going to want to do most of what you want to do in the morning. Try and get things done. And then you probably want to go and hide from the heat when it gets the worst, which is the afternoon. And then maybe go back out in the evening and do some stuff. But you'll probably want to go in, put your feet up, and just take a rest in the afternoon. So you'll be spreading a lot of this stuff out. You're not going to be doing it all in one day. But I would recommend taking a day to go to Penang Hill. And Penang Hill is the highest point on the island, and it's a very popular tourist place, touristy just among the people in Penang, and touristy among people in Malaysia, the Malaysian population, to go and see, because it's a spectacular piece of Penang Island. And it has a little train that goes up and down, a funicular train, so it's done by gravity and a cable, kind of like when you go to Hong Kong and they have that funicular train that you can go up to the top of Victoria Hill. So this is similar. This was first, the train was first put on Penang Hill in the 1920s, and recently in, I can't remember, it was like 2010, they redid the train. The hill is about 883 meters high, so about 2,700 feet. You can do several ways of getting up and down it. Hugh and I like to hike. In fact, when we lived there, I had several hiking groups that I would hike the hill with. And very fun. It's about a 5 meter hike, but it is pretty much straight uphill, straight up that 883 meters. So it's going to take you, depending upon your physical conditioning and take into account you're now in a really hot climate, it'll take you probably 3 hours to go from the base to the top. And the way that you would get there is you would get a Grab, a Grab taxi, and you would tell them you want to be taken to the lower station. Penang Hill Lower Station. And they will take you there. And if you want to hike, there's several different hikes you can do. You can go up the Heritage Trail, which is 1,100 steps, I think, to the middle station. Yeah. And then you go on some trails that get you all the way to the top. Or there's a couple other ways to get up as well. And if you Google, you can find a couple other trail routes to get up there. Most of the time, if you just keep heading straight up, you're going to end up at the top. There is some hiking groups, and sometimes you can see a group standing around, and they're very friendly. You could just go up to one and say, hey, can I join you? Are you hiking up to the top? And they're happy to have people come usually and join them. As you hike up to the top, you'll go past farms. So we've seen okra growing. We've seen passion fruit, bananas, things like that. You'll just hike along and see these different things. And the trails are all very well maintained. They're asphalted. You just have to watch for motorbikes that are running up and down on them as well. And when you get to the top, so you can hike to the top, and you can also take the train to the top. The train to the top and back will cost you 30 ringgit. The train just one way, half of that, 15 ringgit. I recommend if you're going to hike to the top and you want to take the train down, which is definitely recommended because it is a very steep coming back down, that you buy your ticket at the bottom before you head up. Then you don't have to worry about doing it once you get to the top. So at that lower station where you're going to have the Grab take you, there is a big ticket counter. And you just go up to it and tell them, I just want a one way back down, or hey, I want up and down. And you pay for your ticket there, and then you'll do whatever one you want to do. You either hike up. If you're going to hike up, I recommend that you take plenty of water, a little bit of snacks, and a change of clothing.
Okay.
When you get to the top, you are going to be drenched in sweat.
Okay.
You will be super, super sweaty. And coming back down on the train, it's kind of nice to have fresh clothes on because you're stuffed in the train with a whole bunch of other people. You just feel more comfortable, and it's air conditioned inside that train car, and you're going to be cold too because you're not going to dry out real fast. So take your water, take your extra set of clothes, take a few snacks and sunscreen, sun hat, sunglasses, and you should be good to go to hike up. If you're just going to ride the train up, don't worry, just go up. When you do get to the top, whichever way you decide to get there, there's some great views. There's a viewing platform you can go stand out on, and if the day is clear, you can really see all the way down, all over Penang Island, all the way across to the mainland. It's just beautiful. We spoke earlier about what time of year to go.
Right.
There is one time of year I would recommend you not go. And you could check out to see, although I don't know if you could predict enough in advance, they often have what's called haze.
Okay.
And that's from the
burning of the fields.
Yep, the fields out in Indonesia and out in Sumatra and that area of Malaysia. And when that's happening, you don't get any good views because it's not very healthy either. The air is really bad. So that's usually like in the late summer, early fall.
Okay.
When we were in Singapore, we never experienced any bad haze. But the first year we were in Penang, it was terrible for about 4 or 5 weeks, maybe even 8 weeks. So that is a time of year I would not recommend you go.
Okay.
You just won't get any views when you do some of these things. And the air, it's just awful. People aren't staying inside. They're not, you know, doing things because it really is bad for your health.
Well, we didn't mention that we're fairly near Sumatra, which we've also done shows on. Mm-hmm. You know, you're only 100 to 150 miles from Sumatra when you're in Penang.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to get some of that haze and smoke from. They're trying to work with the countries to stop that from happening,
sure,
but it just hasn't happened. So
now, you said a couple things in when you were talking about going up to Penang Hill about talking to the hiking groups and talking to the Grab taxi person and talking to the ticket person. How much am I going to find English in use in Penang since my Malay is non-existent?
Okay. English is everywhere.
Okay.
If you've been to Singapore, it's very similar.
Okay.
It's going to be very rare that you won't be able to communicate very well. And where you're going to find that is going to be in some of your hawker centers.
Okay.
Some of the people who are manning those centers sometimes don't speak real good English. Or if you do go up and talk to some of these hiking groups, you may find some that don't speak a lot of English. But I've never found it to be a big problem at all.
Okay.
I had a hiking group where a couple of the gals, you could tell their English wasn't quite as good, but several people had been in the UK and lived there for a while and their English was perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to have pretty easy access to people that speak English. It was a British colony until 1957. So English was taught in the schools and still is. So most people do have a pretty good grasp of it.
Well, and in the Hawker Center, I can just point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a problem. And I also do things like to find a picture and put it on my phone, and you can show them a picture of something you might want to eat, and they can direct you to the right place to find that.
Okay.
So up at the top of Penang Hill, now that we've gotten there, whichever way we've decided, if we've decided to hike or if we've decided to take the train up, again, you can see these great views, assuming you're on a day that's clear. It'll be beautiful views. And then there's a lovely place you can go to get something to eat. It's our favorite thing to do after we've hiked up the hill to give ourselves a little reward, a little treat. And we'll start talking about some of the food. One of the things I like to get is what's called cendol. And that's a sweet, icy dessert, I suppose you might call it. It's ice with coconut milk on it with red beans and these green little strings of some kind of carbohydrate, like a rice flour that they've congealed, and some palm sugar, which is also called gula melaka. So gula is sugar and melaka is the Malacca area, and this is palm sugar. And it's thick. It's kind of like if you took brown sugar and melted it. and poured it over it as well. And so when you mix, then you take this bowl of this, you get this bowl with all this in it, you mix it all up, and then you eat it. And it's really good. It sounds kind of strange. Mm-hmm. The first few times
it
I saw it, I'm like,
strange.
Yeah, the first few times I saw it, I was like, I'm not eating that, but it is really good. And one of the best ones that I think is on the island is up at the top of Penang Hill. Hmm. It costs about 9 ringgit to get a big bowl of it. And so it's actually very economical as well. Hugh always likes to get what we call a mango ice up at the top of the hill. And that's ice with flavored with mango. And then it has mango chunks on it and some mango ice cream. It's very fancy. His costs a little more. It's about 13 ringgit. So, but we enjoy that.
Well, and those green, I don't know, bean-like, worm-like things on top. Yes. Are rice flour jelly, and those words don't seem to go together to me, but that's what that is.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's very good. I love the coconut with the sugar and the ice, and it's so cooling and you're so hot there. So it's a lovely thing to eat. The one thing about being at the top of Penang Hill too is it is a few degrees cooler. You will actually notice that when you're at the top, that it is a bit cooler than when you're down in the mainland, or the flatlands, I should say, of the island. It is a kind of nice respite from the heat, which was part of why they put the train on originally, was to allow people to get up there to be in that cooler weather. So the British always like to find places that were cooler to go and hang out. So that was part of why that all happened in the first place. So, okay. So after you've seen Penang Hill, that's going to kind of take a day for you to get up there. You'll probably go back, rest, and then go out and find something to eat later. We'll talk a little bit about another pretty cool place to go on the island, which is now we're going to head north of Penang Hill. We're going to head up to that area of Batu Ferenggi, where I said earlier you might want to stay if you wanted to be maybe near a beach. The problem with beaches on Penang Island is none of the water is very clean around the island. There's still sewage being put out into the water.
Oh, okay.
So it's not necessarily a great place to ever go swimming. You will at times smell this smell, not necessarily up there in Batu Ferenggi, but down along Gurney Drive and some of those areas, you can smell the sewage some days out there. So it is, like I say, not necessarily good for swimming and such, but it is pretty along there. And you can get a good view out to sunrises or just kind of even just north out to the ocean. And it's quite pretty. And so those are areas to stay. But if you continue on west of Batu Ferenggi, you will come to an area of the island that has what is called the National Park area of Penang Island. And there's some great hiking up in that area as well. If you want to, I mean, a lot of times people don't think about those kind of things being available in some of these areas of Asia, but this is a beautiful area to be able to go hike. You hike through kind of a jungle and you get out to a beach. And when you go to the national park area, again, you can get a grab car up there. The problem is sometimes it's hard to get a grab to come back because you have to find a driver that's up in that area. So one thing you can do is you could either take like the SoCar up there, like I talked about earlier, or you can maybe talk to your driver and say, hey, I think we're going to be done about this time. Would you come back and get us? Or again, hire a car for the day. But I have found a couple times I've actually used Grab on the island and gotten stuck off in an area where there were no Grab cars around. And I've had to go figure my way back home. But just to keep that in mind up in that area, because you're getting a little more out of the touristy stuff.
Okay.
But it is a lovely place to go. Before you would head out on your hike, there are little booths around the entrance and the parking lot to the national park area that are advertising boat rides. And you would definitely want to talk with one of those. If you want to get this part of the trip, you would want to talk to one of those guys and say, hey, I'm going to hike out Turtle Beach, which is the nice beach to go to out there. And it's a pretty easy walk. And I'm going to be done, I think, about this time. It's going to take you 2 to 3 hours, probably maybe a little longer. Just, you know, set up about 4 hours out. Hey, we're going to be done. And can you come pick us up from the beach at this time? And they have these long boats and they'll come out and they're nice. They're covered. So you're not sitting in the sun when you come back. And I think it's about 10 ringgit a person.
Oh, wow.
And they will, they'll pick you up out there at the beach and then bring you back to the national park parking lot. Now, you can hike back too. It's not a problem to do that if you don't want to try and arrange this boat ride. But it is kind of fun to kind of get to come back on the water afterwards. I think it's about 10 ringgit a person, but usually you'll have a group of several people. It might cost you a little bit more if it's just two or three of you on the boat, but it's not going to be very expensive. To come back in the boat takes about 15, 20 minutes. To hike out there is going to take you an hour and a half or a little more even, depending upon how fast you're going in the heat. But once you get out to Turtle Beach, oh, before you go, I should say, people probably wouldn't know this. At the National Park parking lot, there is also a little restroom area and a little counter area, and you have to sign in there before you head out on the hike. So you just write in your name and tell them, you know, what time, your birthday and all this stuff, and then you head out. I think they're just trying to keep track of who's out there and who's, but they don't do anything when you come back. So I haven't figured out exactly the rationale behind why we're signing into this book, but we've done this hike several times. And you hike out to Turtle Beach. There's little signs along the way. It's pretty well worn path, so you kind of figure how to get there. And if you feel like you're getting lost, there's lots of people usually. You can kind of say, hey, am I still in the right direction? And once you get there, there's this little like turtle conservation area. It's kind of fun. Hmm. They have little baby turtles and some bigger turtles. And you can look at that. And there's a big sign that says Turtle Beach on it. And you can take your picture back to that Instagram crowd stuff. Take your picture by the sign. You can sit on the beach. It's a very pretty beach. The sand is very white. You can wade around the water a little bit. It's not, like I say, for swimming. And then the boat, if you've arranged a boat, will come and pick you up off the beach and take you back. Or if you want, you just hike back. And we've done both ways. It's just sort of a fun thing to do that you wouldn't normally expect you could do maybe when, if you were in a country like this. So it's just an extra fun piece. We found there's quite a lot of hiking and things to see like that on Penang Island. Another just came to me. I hadn't put this down to talk about, but another place where it's really kind of fun to hike around and just walk if you want just to get a little exercise is the Botanic Gardens in Penang. And those are not too far from Gurney Drive. You head inland from Gurney Drive. And we used to be able to bicycle to them because we lived on Gurney Drive. And it was about a 10, 15 minute bike ride over to the Botanic Garden. And along Gurney Drive, there are bicycles that you can rent. So if you did decide you wanted to, so like I said before, Gurney Drive's about a 20-minute walk from Georgetown, and you could take a bike from there and head over to the Botanic Gardens. And there's some hiking paths there. It's very pretty. Doesn't cost anything. And you could wander around for a little bit and just kind of take in some of the natural flora of the area. Some of the things are labeled, so you could see what that type of tree is. But that's just another little pretty way to get out and maybe move your feet a little bit if you need that.
Excellent.
Back to Gurney Drive. That's a huge area of Penang. It's very touristy. It would be equated, I think, to Orchard Road in Singapore. Two big malls. We actually, when we lived there, lived above one of the malls on Gurney Drive.
Okay.
I lived in Gurney Paragon, and there's the Paragon Mall, and there's the Plaza, Gurney Plaza Mall. This would be like stepping into the United States.
Okay.
This would be McDonald's and Starbucks and TGI Fridays. And inside the mall, your stores like, I can't even think of any right now, unfortunately. But some of your major stores that you would come across in the United States, like shoe shops and Nike and... There's some big department stores in there that are not in the United States, but there are big department stores. And there's what we call Popular Bookstore, which is a chain of bookstores in Malaysia and Singapore.
Okay.
So you can see one of those in there. There's movie theaters. There's bookshops. On the fifth floor in Gurney Paragon Mall is a very nice food court that I recommend to people going to. Lots of different choices of food if you're looking for a way to get out of the heat and sit in an air-conditioned food court. It's a very nice one there.
And lots of more local options, not just the Saburo?
This is all local options for the most part. Yeah, yeah. So, and that's just a good segue going into food. There is, like I said, I have said a couple of times, a huge food culture in this country, very similar to Singapore, if you've been there, except this is not all sanitized and beautiful and put into these fancy little hawker centers like what Singapore has done. This is more spread out, a little more lax, but really good.
And by lax, you're not saying unsafe.
No.
You're just saying less.
It's not so regulated by the government. You won't be sitting in these really clean, fancy hawk centers necessarily. But it's not going to be bad either. I have truly never gotten sick from eating the street food. And I do eat street food, both in Singapore or Penang. I have not gotten sick ever. So, and the water is very safe to drink out of the taps in your hotels and places like that.
Okay.
I have never had an issue. So, you know, unless you're really, really sensitive to things like that, I think you would be okay. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the foods that you must try while you're there, because you won't get them in probably any other place except maybe Singapore. But even then, the food in Penang is different to some extent than what you're going to see in Singapore. Similar, but different. One of them is what we call Penang laksa. And Penang laksa is a soup. A noodly soup is the best way to describe it. The base of the soup is mackerel. It's a mackerel broth and little chunks of mackerel. And then they put this soup with these big, thick noodles in it. So they'll put the noodles in the bowl and they'll put some garnishes on top of the soup, pieces of pineapple sometimes, little slices of lily bud, and some other little herbs. And then they pour the broth and the mackerel over the top of it and then give you a little spoonful of some sauce, spicy sauce that you can dump into it if you want. And the best place to get Penang laksa is going to be in that Aira Tom area that we talked about earlier near Kek Lok Si. And that is known for having the best Penang laksa on the island, that whole area. There is one particular place you can go to that's kind of all touristied out. I would go in just a little simple shop anywhere around there and just ask if they have Penang laksa and get your Penang laksa there. It'll be different from the laksa that you might get in Singapore. As in Singapore's laksa, often they have coconut milk, and there isn't coconut milk in a true Penang laksa.
Okay.
It's very good. It's a little bit kind of sourishy and fishy. If you don't like fish, you probably wouldn't like it, but I think it's quite good. And then there's the national dish of Malaysia, which is nasi lemak. Nasi means rice. Lemak means fatty. So the reason they call it fatty rice is because it's rice cooked with coconut milk. Okay. And that doesn't sound very interesting in itself, and it wouldn't be, except that they add things to that. So you'll get your nasi lemak, your fatty rice, with different additions, usually some sambal. Sambal is a fiery, hot, red-colored accompaniment or sauce. It's not really a sauce because it's usually pretty thick, but it's traditionally Malay, and it's fishy because there is a fish component to it, and chilies and some sugar, their gula melaka they add to it, and some tamarind. So it's got all those components all together into this fiery sauce. And so that always comes with your nasi lemak. And then usually you'll get some fried anchovies and fried peanuts that come alongside this, as well as a fried egg and some cucumber slices. And that's a pretty good representation of a nasi lemak. And occasionally you'll get chicken served with it as well. But the best nasi lemak on the island, in my opinion, and in a lot of people's opinion, is down on Beach Street in Georgetown at Ali Nasi Lemak. And it's called A-L-I. And it's very cheap. You can get a little banana leafed wrap packet of nasi lemak for 1.8 ringgit. So almost nothing.
That's like 20 cents or something like that.
About 25. No, more than that. About 50 cents.
50
Close
cents.
To 50 cents. Yeah. And it's, I usually get two because it's a pretty small kind of dialed back version of nasi lemak, but it had, they have different ones you can order. You can get the rice with the sauce and a piece of egg, or the rice and the sauce and some squid, or the rice and the sauce and some little dried fish. So it's kind of not quite the plate that you might get at another place, but it's very inexpensive and it is really good. And the piece that makes it so good is how they make their rice and how they make their sambal sauce. And so that's a very good example of what it should taste like. So if you want to get a very authentic, very good, very inexpensive bit of nasi lemak, that's the place to go. And then we move on to a different type of food, which is what we call char kway teow. And char kway teow is fried noodles tossed in a very hot wok with different sauce ingredients, usually some egg and maybe some shrimp or chicken will be thrown in there as well. And they do it over the best, so to speak, from people there is done over a charcoal fire. So like in the old days. So if you can find a place that does it over a charcoal fire, it's excellent. And there is one that we used to go to on New Lane. So it was called the New Lane Hawker area or New Lane Street Food area. And that's down in the middle of Georgetown. It's very close to the Gen Hotel, which is where HP used to put us up. You can walk there very quickly, 5-10 minute walk. And the only thing to know about New Lane Street Food is I believe they're closed on Wednesdays. Okay. So don't try and go there on Wednesday, but a great place to go. There's all kinds of street food there, but you'll have to wait in line to get your char kway teow. But it is worth the wait to get it there. It's very good. It's very authentic. Nice hot noodles. And that's going to cost you, I'm trying to think, I think that was around 8 or 9 ringgit to get that. And it's different prices, how many eggs. If you want 2 eggs, 1 egg, prices all change. If you want duck eggs versus chicken eggs, I would highly recommend the duck egg version. It's very good. And it'll be about 9-10 ringgit for that. We already talked about the chendol, which I like at the top of Penang Hill. People will tell you about Tia Chow Chendol in downtown Georgetown. I would skip that. That's always touted as the best chendol on the island, but it is not, in my opinion. And many locals feel the same way. It's more kind of a touristy thing now.
Okay.
But the best chendol, get it at the top of Penang Hill or down where we talked about where to get the Penang Laksa in Ayer Tom. There's some good chendol in that area too. Another place to go, really good to try out while you're there, you're going to have lots of time to eat, is Nasi Kandar. So Nasi Kandar is, do you remember when you came to Singapore, we went to that place where we ordered the different foods, you stood in line and you got your rice and then they put different stuff on the plate. So Nasi Kandar is very similar. Nasi Kandar is often run by the Indian population. You'll see them as the ones that are operating these stalls or stands. There's one place down in the there's lots of places in the Georgetown area in that Little India area of Penang Island for Nasi Kandar. And again, you can Google it. Many people like a place called Line Clear, L-I-N-E, and then Clear. There's also Hamida. There's Rafi. Rafi is over right where we used to live along Gurney Drive. All these places you can go and for 10-15 ringgit. And there's even a place up on that Gurney Paragon food court. There's a place in there even you can get some Nasi Kandar. And you will get a plate of rice. When you first step up to the counter, they'll give you some rice on a plate. And then you kind of point at these different curry dishes or pieces of fried chicken or whatever that you want. And they add it to your plate. And then they'll put extra sauce. If you say, yeah, I want more of the curry sauce, they'll put it all over it. And then you go and you check out and the guy kind of looks at what you have and he gives you a price. And I'm sure he gives tourists a higher price.
I never worry about those sort of things. That I figure the prices are usually low enough that I don't mind the tourist tax.
It's not a problem, but usually you'll talk to your friends and they'll be like, you had to pay that much? My Chinese friends will be like, you paid how much? I'm like, well, I thought they did. So in any case, it's not going to be very much money. It's going to be 13, 14, 15 ringgit probably for what you get. And that's going to be around $3 to $4. So you're going to get a really big plate of food with lots of different things on it. And it's worthwhile to do just for the fun. Often you'll be picking things you might not even know what they are. This is going to be a place where the person may not be able to tell you much more than if you say, what is it? They might give you chicken or what is that fish? You know, but you don't know like what kind of fish or how they cook that fish or different things like that. You will get kind of a surprise meal probably, but it will probably also be very good. and tasty. One thing you might want to always check out too, though, when you go to some of these places, is what the heat level of some of the things are.
Got it. Okay.
You might be able to, if it's not too crowded, which unfortunately most of the time these places have quite a lot of people, you could say, hey, can I just try a little bit of that to see how spicy it is? But you will find that Malay food, true Malay food, is very spicy.
Okay.
Not the Chinese food. If you go to a Chinese restaurant in Malaysia, that will not be spicy because most of the Chinese population do not like the extra spice. But if you go to any of these nasi kandar or a Malay food restaurant, it will be spicy.
And as I recall, a lot of the Chinese who are in Malaysia are from southern China, so more like Cantonese than, you know, Sichuan or something like that, which would make sense.
They're the Han Chinese, most of them, or if they're from the Hainan area, like Hainanese people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and they tend to stick again to their own food, and they were always very surprised how much I liked the spicy food. My Chinese friends were so, but I love spicy food, and for them, most of them don't enjoy it very much. Hmm. So that's definitely a place to not miss. Are the nasi kandar, getting at least one meal at a nasi kandar place, just try that out and enjoy that. So that's kind of sums up most of the food. Oh, one more piece of food. I'm sorry, I almost forgot. Another big piece of food in Malaysia and Singapore and some of that area there is what we call kuih. And kuih, it's K-U-E-H, are little bites or little snacks. Very big and very popular. The recipes for these date back years. People have been making the same thing over and over for many, many years. They're often coconut-based, rice-based, slightly sweet. Some are not. Some are savory. And you can find these at some of the wet markets. There'll be little stands that have kuih. Or you can go to certain restaurants on Burma Road in the Gurney Drive area of the island. There's a place called Lier. So L-I and then E-R, Lier. And they have very nice kuih. We have walked over there many times and gotten some kuih. And then there's some older places around town, too. I do not know how to pronounce this one.
And kuih looks more like a dessert.
It can be, but can also be not sweet.
Okay.
Some of them are savory. Some of them are rolled in a banana leaf, and it'll have like a little shrimp.
Okay.
They call it rempa. Rempa is the spice base.
Okay.
Much of the Malay cooking. And they'll have a little rempa with shrimp inside rice. Most of them are sweet, but some are not.
Hmm.
Yeah. But most of them are, and they'll have a coconut, like I say, a coconut milk component with sugar. My favorite is two layers, rice that is blue and white on the bottom layer, and it has a green custard, coconut custard layer on top. And that's my favorite, called kuih salat. But there's many, many to try. Part of this is also what they call kaya jam. Kaya jam is made out of eggs and coconut milk and sugar, and they cook it down.
Hmm.
And it's kind of like an apple butter, but it's a coconut egg butter. And it's really good. I used to just eat it out of the jar, just straight. It's fantastic to put on toast. They will use it. They'll have their kopi, their coffee in the morning, with a piece of toast with cayenne butter on it. And it's kind of addictive. It's very good. So the kuih, like I say, you can find them in different markets. You can find them at Lier. And then there's a very old kuih place called Mohteng, Teng.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know how they pronounce, Pheow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Nonya Kuih Penang. It's on Chulia Street down in Georgetown. And I've been there a couple times, and very good kuih in that place. Very small little place to go in. You kind of walk through the back door and you're wondering, am I in the right place? Because you're walking through the kitchen.
Okay.
As you go in, and you're kind of like, but it's kind of interesting because you can kind of see how they're making them. And then you kind of come into the little reception area and you say, you can either buy kuih right out of the case there, like they have a little display case, or you can go sit down and order some with some tea or coffee and just have a little snack. But they're very nice to try. I always tell people, at least try a few of them while you're in Penang. Something different that you're not going to find anywhere else. In fact, I don't really think that we have a real equivalent in the U.S.
Hmm.
to what they are. we just don't. I mean, a cookie maybe or something like that, but we really don't have kind of an equivalent to what these are because they're very highly crafted. I mean, there's layers to them and different colors and different things that they put together. And so it's not just a single little, like a cookie or something like that. So it's very, very nice to have just your afternoon tea with something like that.
Anything else before we get to our wrap-up questions?
I don't think so. I mean, the one other little piece is there is shopping. I think we've talked about that a little bit with big malls, but, you know, you can do that anywhere. So nothing fancy about doing that there. So if you decide to go to the west side of the island and you're there during the months of May, June, or July, you will be there during durian season.
Okay.
And you would get the opportunity to try some of the best durian in that area of the world, which comes out of Penang. So if you like durian or you think that you want to try it and see if you like it, there's no better place to do that than to get to the west side of the island in an area called Balik Palau. And that's where there's many durian farms and you'd have the opportunity to try durian. I have tried durian. I do not want to ever try it again. But I did go with my Chinese friends once and we sat at a place over there while they all ate durian and I ate my own little snack that I brought with me. They kept trying to persuade me to eat it and I kept saying, really, really, it's better that you enjoy it. It would just be wasted on me. So you guys keep your durian and eat it. And they had a great time. But it was fun to go see where they grow them and it was interesting. So that is a little piece I forgot to throw in earlier, but that is an opportunity. You could hire a driver or get a SOCAR and take yourself over to the west side of the island and see that.
Excellent. Well, and I think you've probably already mentioned it, but if I say you're standing at the prettiest spot in Penang, where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I would be standing at the top of Penang Hill.
Okay.
I thought
that might be the case.
On a clear day, looking out over the whole island off to the mainland and the bridges and all. It's just beautiful.
And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Penang.
Well, eating some of the things I've learned to eat there. Eating little fried anchovies with the heads and everything still on. Eating the chendol with those little green strings and the beans. I mean, only in Penang would I have learned to eat things like that, probably.
And if you had to summarize Penang in just three words, what three words would you use?
Hot.
Mm-hmm.
Hiking.
Okay.
And food.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Ruth. And Ruth, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love from Penang. I'm just sorry that I couldn't visit you when you were there. We just didn't get our act together in time.
Yeah, I'm sorry too. It would have been really fun to have you guys come. And thank you for having me.
Although since I know my wife doesn't like hot weather, it perhaps was fortunate for her. But
yes, yes. But we would have had fun having you guys there, so.
We're going to keep the community section short because this is a longer episode. Thanks again to the patrons who support the show. Another way to support the show is through some of the affiliate links. For instance, if you're ordering something on Amazon and go to amateurtraveler.com/Amazon before you do, you pay no more money, but Amateur Traveler gets a cut. Links for Amateur Traveler go to amateurtraveler.com/affiliates. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral.